Welcome to the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell. The Wellness Enclave will explore emotional health and its impact on everyday life. In the Enclave, we will address how emotional health is connected to other parts of your life, such as physical health, relationships, spirituality, and even decision making. Our goal in the Wellness Enclave is to help you become a healthier, happier you through motivation, education, and innovation. And now, the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Donna Sewell, coming to you from the Wellness Enclave, where emotional wellness is our top priority. Today, we have an exceptional guest in our studio, Mr. Cliff Daniels. He is a therapist at Pact Atlanta. Today, we're going to talk about understanding therapy and counseling. In many instances, there are individuals who want to seek counseling, but they don't know what they need to do. So we're going to talk about the different types of counseling, when you should seek counseling, and what to expect once you get into a therapy session. So hi, Mr. Daniels. How are you today?
Good morning, Donna. I am very well. Thank you for having me this morning.
Yes, sir. So both of us are licensed clinical social workers. One of the things I wanted to talk about are the different types of professionals or disciplines that can provide counseling and therapy, because a lot of times as licensed clinical social workers, people think, they just think we're going to come in and take their kids.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Yes.
So we do. So we do several other things. We have several other jobs and duties. So talk to us a little bit about the different types of professionals that can provide counseling and therapy.
Okay. As a licensed clinical social worker, we have the opportunity to be involved in many different areas. There are school social workers. There are case managers. Mm-hmm. There are licensed clinical social workers who provide not only case management, but also provide ongoing therapy. We also get the opportunity to work in hospitals as hospital social workers as well. And so we have the opportunity to tap into a wide variety of patients or clients, or however you want to mm-hmm. refer to them, mm-hmm. to meet them at the point of their needs. Mm-hmm. And so we have the capability to be able to do that. We are trained as social workers to do those things. And a lot of people have the tendency to believe that we are just working for Children's Services and that we have a reputation of removing you from your home. Right. You know, in all fairness, some years ago, that was the role mm-hmm. of a lot of the social work, was to go into the homes to decide if the children were safe enough to be in the homes. Now what has happened is that the role of the social worker has truly evolved, and we've been able to tap into some of the other gifts, talents, and abilities that we've had, and have the opportunity to use them mm-hmm. in many areas of our lives.
Okay. And also as licensed clinical social workers, we, just so everyone knows, we have the ability to diagnose. The only thing we cannot do is prescribe medication. So in terms of individual therapy, we are able to provide that as well as group therapy. There are other individuals such as licensed marriage family therapists. They have the ability to provide individual counseling. They specialize primarily in of course, marriage and family. So, of course, if you're having any issues or relationship issues or family issues, although an LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker or a licensed professional counselor, can do those things, the first thing I would recommend is to seek out an LMFT, because that's what they're trained in. So a licensed marriage family therapist. And you heard me mention licensed professional counselors. The other piece is we need to clarify the difference between, counselors and psychiatrists. In many instances, people get upset when they go to the psychiatrist because they feel like this person only sat up and spoke with me for 15 minutes. The reality is, even though psychiatrists definitely have the ability to provide counseling, most of them simply do med management, meaning it is a 15-minute visit.
Yes.
And they're going to prescribe, they're going to see what medication works for you, what doesn't work for you, and then they're going to prescribe it. So in many instances, please understand that they are doing their job when you go to see them. They did not sign up to provide counseling.
So true. So true.
In addition, you can also see psychologists as well. Even though many psychologists primarily do psychological testing, there are some that also provide individual counseling services. So again, just to run through that, you have licensed clinical social workers, licensed marriage family therapists, licensed professional counselors, psychologists, and sometimes psychiatrists who are able to provide that individual therapy for you. And out of all of that, the only, the only discipline that can actually prescribe the medication would be the psychiatrist.
And if I may add, if we have someone that is threatening to harm themselves or someone else, a licensed clinical social worker, and most recently licensed professional counselors, have the capability of having them admitted to the hospital under 1013 to ensure the safety of the individual and those around them.
Okay.
So we do have that capability and that right and responsibility to make sure that that happens.
So then that brings up a good question. When should a person seek counseling? When should a person seek counseling or therapy?
That's a very good question, Dr. Sue. Within our lives, if we are struggling with issues that affect our everyday living, if I can't get out of the bed, if I am constantly crying, if I am hearing and seeing things that other people do not see or hear, if I have thoughts of wanting to harm myself or other people, those are some signs that I need help. And a lot of times, people will ignore those because they think I can handle it on my own, or I don't want to say anything about it because I'm too embarrassed. What is happening, as we see in society, is that when those symptoms have gone unchecked or undiagnosed, people have been led to do things that have been detrimental and sometimes deadly. So we encourage people that if what you are going through is affecting your everyday living, to reach out for help, because help is there. But if you don't access it, then you won't be able to take advantage of it. There are many mental health professionals that are there who are ready to support you, but make the first step. And sometimes it's difficult because there is a stigma that's attached to mental health, and people don't want to have the stigma attached. But I want to ask you, what is it that you do now for yourself that could show up later on in life if you're not taking care of yourself now? So we have to be as proactive as we can. We know that recently we've heard of many people, to include celebrities, who have taken their lives. And as a result of that, that has placed a spotlight on major depression and what it is doing to people and within their families and how it affects their families. If we can reach someone and support them through the crisis and help them stabilize the symptoms, then hopefully the hope is that they can heal from some of the hurt and be able to stabilize and live a healthier life. And so mental health support is available. We just have to reach out and we have to ask for it.
Suppose I'm having problems. I'm not major depression. And I'm going to have a show, of course, where we talk about depression later on so people can recognize those symptoms. But you know what? Suppose I'm working with you and you're my supervisor and you're just stressing me out. You're stressing me out. Can I get counseling for that? Should I go and get counseling for that?
I think that if it's affecting your ability to do your job, most certainly. I think most of employers have access to EAP services. And so if you believe that you need that support, follow up with your supervisor, follow your chain of command. I think HR department can refer you to the proper channel so that you can get the support you need. If you're going to participate in EAP services, they can help you to be able to kind of sort through what struggles you're having in the moment. And that could be work-related on a short-term basis. They're basically using solution-focused therapy to not look at the problem, but to look at solutions and how you can move forward so that you can resolve whatever needs to be resolved and get back to working to your best capacity.
In addition to the employee assistance program, which most employers do offer at this time, and as you stated, it is what they call solution-focused brief therapy. So it may be anywhere depending from four sessions You're offered per issue or per concern or problem to maybe 10. It's just depending on your EAP program at your particular job. But in addition to EAP, are there any other, are there different types of counseling that you can receive outside of EAP or brief solution focused therapy?
If you're talking about outside of the workplace,
yes, sir.
Then certainly there are practices that you can call to determine if they actually accept your insurance. You can ask if there's a particular therapist that you can work with that has a particular specialty that you may need support in. All it takes is for you to do some research mm-hmm. and to decide what it is that you need help with so that you can have an assessment from a professional, a licensed professional, to help determine what course of therapy or support that you need.
In addition to EAP, and I know you said, you know, we can, once you go and see the provider, or you not provider, but once you go and see the mental health professional or provider, and you do an assessment when you go in, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, and you say they can help you determine what type of therapy you need. So what are the different types of therapy? Because I know there are there's long-term therapy, there's short-term therapy, and we just talked a little bit about that. There is also Christian counseling. Some people they prefer Christian counseling. Can you talk about the differences between those things? Like, what's the difference between short-term and long-term therapy?
Short-term therapy focuses really on kind of what's going on here and now to get you through whatever the crisis that you are going through. And a lot of times people who come in for services are just in a crisis, and they may not need long-term therapy, but something to get them through the immediate crisis. Someone who has who needs long-term therapy usually has unresolved issues from the past, that continue to haunt or plague them and interrupt their daily living. And so once the assessment is completed, then what happens is that the mental health professional will speak with the individual and kind of talk about what type of therapeutic approaches that they may implement, what type of goals could be on their treatment plan based on what the person represents when they meet with that individual. Again, some people are just having a crisis and just need some support through the crisis. And so that's determined between the person that's doing the assessment and the individual.
And one of the things about counseling as well, you can either go in and do solution focus, which is normally going to be sessions that are gonna be, that will fall in line with the brevity in terms of brief therapy, usually when you just want solution-based. And then there are some individuals who really need what we call talk therapy. So in those instances, they have to go in and they kind of have to talk everything out. In those instances, it will end up being long-term therapy. Long-term therapy can be anywhere from 6 months to, I've seen people in therapy for two and three years. So it's just depending on what you're dealing with, because some people have unresolved trauma in addition to some other issues that may be going on. Can you please tell me, I want you to really explain this to me because I am not adept in this at all, the difference between Christian and secular counseling, because in many instances, individuals will request Christian counseling, but they actually want a person who is spiritual in nature when they're providing advice, as opposed to the Christian counselor who may be working directly from a religious doctrine, which would more than likely be the Bible. So can you explain that, the differences?
I can. The goal for secular counseling basically is to increase the individual's ability to function more effectively or become emotionally stable. The goal for Christian counseling is to enable the person to heal in order that they may interact with God more effectively and be able to utilize their gifts in the body of Christ. And so for a secular counselor, the individual is to be self-empowered. They are seen as a self-empowered entity, and that they're responsible for the change that they need to make, that they themselves are responsible for making those changes. Within Christian counseling, it's believed that the Holy Spirit works through the therapist and within the person in order to facilitate the change. And so that particular counseling is Bible-based. Okay. And so those are some of the goals and differences between the two. So if someone is coming in asking for a Christian counselor, at this point, the person who's providing the services needs to be trained as a Christian counselor. And so there are trainings, there are degrees that are now in place for people who want to become Christian counselors to ensure that they are using the Bible in a way that best supports the patient that comes in for the services.
All right. Thank you. You are so intelligent. I've always loved speaking to you. Always loved speaking to you. We're going to go to a break really quickly, and we'll be right back.
Hi there, healthy people. Do you have a healthy product or service? If you are a certified medical professional, fitness trainer, author, or chef, Old Fashioned Health would love to promote your services or product on the Old Fashioned Health Radio Show. Please reach out to us. Call 404-793-3960 or email us at oldfashionedhealth@gmail.com. You can also contact us at oldfashionedhealth.com. Old Fashioned Health, good health inside and out.
Hi, welcome back to the Enclave with Dr. Sewell and our special guest, Mr. Cliff Daniel. We've been talking about understanding therapy. Just to clarify, you will hear us using the terms therapy and counseling interchangeably, and they're actually the same thing. A lot of people want to know the difference, but in reality, they're the same thing. For this particular segment, what we want to talk about is once you decide to reach out and get help, we want to talk about the various resources that are available to you, as well as what to expect when you go into that first counseling session. And we also want to talk about your rights as a client, because as a client, you absolutely positively have rights. One of the things I wanted to interject, though, before we get started on this, from our last segment, we were talking about the different types of counseling, long-term, short-term, secular versus Christian. One of the things that we talked about was trauma and things of that nature, and we talked about crisis counseling as well. Now, if you are a person that, and you feel like you want to harm yourself or someone else, that is an immediate, you need to call 911, you need to go to the closest hospital, you need to tell a friend so they can sit with you, or they can come and pick you up and take you to the closest hospital. So that's not something that you sit on. Definitely if you're dealing with some level of depression, but it's not to that point where you feel like you want to harm yourself or someone else, then absolutely seek out assistance and try to set an appointment up. But if it's something emergent, that's something we call emergent and imminent, that's something right there that you need to take care of as soon as possible, even if you have to call the suicide hotline. So I just wanted to put that out there before we start on the second segment.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I have decided, so I'm dealing with depression. I've decided, hey, I want to get some counseling. So you've spoken to us about the EAP program that the employer, most employers offer. But what are some other resources? Where else do I need to reach out? What are some other resources? Can I go to the website on Psychology Today? Tell me where I can go. Tell me what I can do.
Yes, you can. You can go to Psychology Today and actually look for the therapist that has the qualifications that you desire. You can also contact your community mental health service department. Each county has a county service board that has resources. You can also contact United Way, Atlanta.org, and look for resources as well. There are a lot of private practices, and I know that the procedure for those is that when you are looking for support, you can call a private practice after you've done your research to determine which one you'd like to call and ask for the new patient care coordinator. They will then take your information, they will verify your insurance, and then get you set up for an assessment. Once you've come in for your assessment, you'll meet with a, for the most part, a prescriber. If you're a person that needs medication or have a history of taking medication, you'll meet with either a physician assistant, or a nurse practitioner who will sit down with you, take your information, ask you a lot of questions, and kind of determine if you need medication, and if so, what type of medication. From there, you will be assigned a therapist. because the nurse practitioners, physicians, and physician assistants do not provide therapy. They will conduct an assessment with you and then help determine what medication you need. They will follow up with you afterwards, once a month, sometimes every two, every 3 months, to determine if the medication that you are taking is working for you and if your mood is stabilizing. Their responsibility is just to manage your medication, and the visit is only 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what they offer, and that is exactly what your insurance will pay for.
Okay.
And so they are going to stick by that. They then will refer you to a therapist within the practice, depending on your specifications, if that particular specification is available, so that you can meet with the clinician and start your therapy. When you meet with the clinician, you get the opportunity to talk about what your needs are and what brought you to the practice in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The clinician or therapist or counselor would have read your assessment that was completed by the doctor that did the initial assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So have some information about who's walking into the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get the opportunity to come in and talk with the therapist about what brings you there,
mm-hmm.
and talk about what therapy goals that you may have in mind for yourself so that you can get started on your healing process.
And I think it's also important to mention that, just because you go to therapy or you seek out therapy, it does not necessarily mean that you will be prescribed any medication.
Absolutely.
Because, of course, you can always get therapy, and medication is not necessary. Also, there's another, there are several ways to seek out therapy, and Mr. Daniels has just mentioned one. The other option is you will go directly into a private practice where there is no prescriber. And they will do an assessment on you, meaning the mental health professional who will be the LCSW, the psychologist, or the LMFT, all of those people we mentioned in the first segment. You will do an assessment, and again, they'll look at the information. It's the same process. The only difference is you're not walking into a full-scale clinic. You're actually walking into a person's private practice, that office. They will not be prescribing medication. It is solely to sit down and talk to you and to provide that therapy. I think it's also important to mention that if you do need medication, please do not be afraid to take it. It is okay. And do not take the medication, particularly with certain diagnoses, and feel like I'm doing better and then stop taking it.
Yes.
Because it will pose a problem. If you need to take the medication, again, let me reiterate, please take it. Everyone, however, does not have to take medication for their entire life. It is depending upon the diagnosis as well as the circumstance. Sometimes it is okay for you to only take medication temporarily. However, please check with your provider first before you take yourself off of the medication. Do not just take yourself off of the medication. Talk to your clinician so your clinician can say, okay, he or she is doing better. Talk to the psychiatrist or the nurse practitioner, which is the person who prescribed the medication. Tell them what you want to do so you guys can operate as a team to determine whether or not it's great for you to get off the medication. Well, let's try to titrate, meaning let's go from 20 milligrams to 10 milligrams, or no, you need to stay on the medication.
Absolutely.
Okay, so those are some things as well to really look at. Please understand that the therapy, if you do have to take medication along with the therapy, that is really a good goal. They basically complement one another, okay? The medication is dealing with one set of symptoms, the immediate symptoms in terms of what you may be experiencing, like maybe depression, but then the counseling is going to help you with the long term so that you can maintain and have your own coping mechanisms and coping skills and be able to identify the symptoms that you may be having.
I totally agree. But I do want to say this. There have been times when an individual has come in to be assessed at a practice that does not have providers mm-hmm. for medication, and then it was determined during assessment that they probably would work best with medication.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then a therapist, clinician, would refer you
Correct.
Out to meet with a prescriber or probably with their primary care physician
mm-hmm.
so that you can get that support if needed. But certainly there are lots of people who don't need medication but who need talk therapy. And there are a lot of practices out there, individual practices that support that.
And we keep mentioning assessment, so let us give you an idea of what's in the assessment, because I don't want you to think you're going to walk into the office and be poked and prodded on, or they're going to pull some pictures out and tell you and say, hey, what's this right here? Describe this. What are you seeing right here? It's not that. We basically want to find out about you, like, why are you there? We want to know if you've been to therapy before, to see if you understand what the process is. And if there's any mental health history in the family, we want to know if there's any substance use or substance abuse history, because sometimes that can impact your emotional wellness or your emotional health. We want to find out whether or not there's been any trauma. So we may ask if there's been any abuse, whether it's physical, emotional, or sexual. And again, this assessment is to find out about you. Everything that you provide to us is confidential. We do not have the right to share it with anyone. And so I want to make that clear as well. Everything you provide is confidential. We can only share information if you sign a release of information and or if it's an emergency. And that emergency is if something comes about and you state that you want to harm yourself or someone else, then we may have to provide some information, but still not all of it. Only the information that's pertinent to you wanting to harm yourself. Okay? So it is confidential. But that is what the assessment is. It's usually only like maybe 3 or 4 pages. We're not asking you to relive anything. We just want to know if something is there. So once you come in and speak to us, then we will have we'll have some knowledge of what's going on, and we can figure out which direction.
And certainly the assessment helps us to determine your diagnosis. So when we have all the information that we need, we can determine the correct diagnosis.
Okay, so we're going to run through some things really quickly, you can go to my website to find this information once, and I'll give it to you at the end of the segment. We only have 2 minutes left, so we're on a countdown right now. So there are a couple of things. One, understand that you have rights when you go into a counseling session, okay? You have the right to fire your therapist. You do have that right. You don't have to say you're fired. You can simply say when they say, hey, you can say, I don't think you're the therapist for me. And or when they ask you, do you want to do a follow-up appointment, you can simply say, let me think about it, and then you can go and find you another therapist. It will not count against you. It's not going to follow you. It does not mean that the therapist is bad. It simply means that you guys just will not have a good rapport, and or this individual, his or her therapeutic approach is not the approach that's going to be beneficial or effective for me. So you absolutely have that right. What should you expect when you go into that first session? Other than doing that assessment, the therapist should tell you what his or her approach is, okay? The therapist should outline what your goals are and what your expectations are, because you are the person who, in a sense, you're guiding that session. You're guiding your own therapy. You know at that point what you're seeking, okay? So they should talk to you and say, hey, what is it that you want? And this is how I can help you and how I can be effective. And so this, and then you guys will come up with what we call a brief treatment plan, in terms of here are the next steps that we need to take to get you where you want to be, okay? Those are some of your rights. Those should be some of the things that you expect when you go into a therapy session. Mr. Daniels, before we close out, is there anything else that we need to discuss?
Well, I want to say that if you are specifically looking for therapy in the Decatur area, I am at PACT Atlanta. We're located at 465 Winway, Suite 221, Decatur, Georgia, 30030. We have available on staff licensed clinical social workers, licensed professional counselors, physicians, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners. Give us a call, 404-292-3810, and we will be more than happy to support you. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of this process.
Absolutely. As I say, I always enjoy speaking with you. You always make me smile, so I appreciate you for being the first guest on my show. It's very much appreciated. I appreciate the listening audience, and I hope that you will tune in next week at 7 a.m., on Wednesday morning. Thank you for joining us in the Enclave, and I hope you have a very healthy and happy day.
This has been the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell. Join us each Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WWE The Real 1100 AM. We look forward to growing with you.